Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, September 4th. I'm Ray Graff. The deadly Hurricane Dorian is forecast to impact the southeastern U.S. this week after moving through the Bahamas. Here to discuss that storm and answer your weather questions is meteorologist Jason Goff, formerly of News Channel 13 in Albany. Jason now runs a forecasting website at jasonsweather.com. You have a question about hurricanes, tornadoes, or even what fall has in store, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551. You can even bring up winter if you have to. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number is 800-348-2551. Meteorologist Jason Goff is here. Your weather calls coming up right after the news. Hi, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're joined today by meteorologist Jason Goff for a discussion about the weather, including the deadly Hurricane Dorian, forecast to impact the southeastern U.S. this week. Formerly of News Channel 13 in Albany, Jason now runs a very cool forecasting website at jasonsweather.com. If you have a question for Jason Goff, the number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But that number is 800-348-2551. Jason Goff, welcome back, sir.
Thank you very much. You know, stop me if you've heard this before, but we have severe weather on a Wednesday.
Oh, that's right. You know, do tell. You do it in that professional way that you do.
Well, we got this is a severe thunderstorm warning. I'm gonna look at the radar here on my phone. The nastiest of it right now basically stretches from the city of Albany straight up the Northway to I would say around exit 10 on the Northway, and then continuing to go east from there into Rensselaer County. So this is a warning that is in effect. What do they give this a time? Until 2:45, so right. About another 35 minutes. So this is right now, you know, places that are getting pummeled are like Cohoes, Troy, you're on deck, and then a little bit farther to the east from there as you head over toward Averill Park, West Sand Lake, and then eventually over into western New England from there. And then also a little storm that is not warned, but still pretty good little storm up into central Washington County around Cambridge, just now moving past Greenwich. So it's a good little cluster of storms. We have a cold front that's coming through, and this is the second round. There is a severe thunderstorm watch until 9, but it'll be canceled, I would imagine, maybe even before our show is over, but certainly before the evening commute gets going. So it'll be quieting down.
Funny you mentioned the watch. I saw somewhere on one of our news feeds in the newsroom a watch basically covering Maryland, Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey. It's a huge watch area. What constitutes a severe thunderstorm watch?
Well, it just means that conditions are ripe for the potential for severe weather. There's three things that classify severe weather. Heavy rain, lightning are not two of them. So any winds greater than 58 miles per hour, which most of the time around here, as you know, we get straight line winds. Also hail up an inch or greater in diameter. So those are the two. But if a funnel cloud is spotted, and certainly if a tornado is spotted, then that's also a severe thunderstorm warning. And it could also be a tornado warning as well. So a watch just means that, you know, it's possible that we're going to get severe weather. So I always tell folks, you watch for a warning.
Right.
There's a great little somebody put this together a while ago. I love it. The watch is the old lady in the Wizard of Oz on the bike, and then that's the watch, and then the warning is the Wicked Witch.
Nice.
So that's kind of a good way to remember that as well.
Our number is 800-348-2551 if you have a weather question for meteorologist Jason Goff. How's the website going?
The website's going great. I'm really having a great time with it. I've partnered up with the Times Union to provide whatever weather content they like, and I've got some other things that are going to be going on as well, where I'll be helping schools out, not only in forecast, but I'll be getting back into doing what I've always enjoyed, and that's going to visit schools, talk to classes and things. But, you know, the whole goal of the site is to be able to provide as specific a forecast as possible for whatever you have going on. So if you're going to SPAC, if you're, you know, daughter has a birthday party at 2 o'clock on a Saturday. And in the case of the schools, if there's a back to school movie night, you know, what's the forecast for that location at that time? So that way people don't have to go hunting around for it.
Well, the weather website is jasonsweather.com. You know, most people, not most, but a lot of people have broadband now. Do you ever get the urge to throw on the old suit, get the green screen out, and do a little video right on your website?
You know, we've talked about that. I have the capability to – I can record my desktop.
Yeah.
And when I talk to the folks at the Times Union, they suggest – and I think it's a good suggestion. I've never had a webcam before, but I'm going to get one.
Yeah.
So that you'll see my mug there in addition to the things that I'm showing on the screen.
Right.
So it'll be a little bit, but I'll also be doing some videos too, just to be able to kind of get back into that because, you know, it's just something that I enjoy. It's a lot of fun. I think the funnest thing with it, too, is just to, as I send out emails to folks in the morning.
Right.
And I just changed the format of that up because I want it to be as brief but as concise as possible. So I just tweak that. So if you sign up, it doesn't cost you anything, and you'll get an email every morning by 6 o'clock.
Website is jasonsweather.com. Meteorologist Jason Goff is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Before we get to the calls, let's talk about Dorian a little bit. Now, you know, I've heard so much about the fact that this is one of the slowest moving hurricanes ever. What happened?
Record. Well, you know, there are larger entities in the atmosphere that steer these things. They're called steering currents. So the forecasting challenge, and let me say, by the way, people don't grasp the incredible skill that the forecasters have at the National Hurricane Center. They get a lot of support. You know, I mean, the federal government catches a lot of grief for being dysfunctional, and deservedly so sometimes. But I will tell you that the meteorological community comes together to try to get the best forecast they can to let people know. So think about it. If you live in West Palm Beach and you see this giant tornado, basically was what it was, over the Bahamas, and as the crow flies, you're talking about 60 miles, and the Hurricane Center is saying, don't worry about it. The thing is going to take a turn to the north. So what happened was why it stayed stationary was there was nothing to steer it.
Right.
So there were two entities in that. One is what's sweeping through here right now is a big trough in the middle of the country that's now moving through the eastern part of the U.S. That was the one thing, and that's ultimately what's going to steer this out to sea. It may make landfall in the Carolinas. It could make landfall as close as, say, Charleston or Myrtle Beach. Mm-hmm. More likely, it would be kind of on the southern outer banks, if you will, south of like Hatteras. And then it's going to take off like a shot and make its way out into the Atlantic.
So it will pick up speed, in other words?
Oh, yeah. It'll be really hauling. So that's the one entity. The other is something that's called a semi-permanent high, the Bermuda High. That's the entity that's responsible for us getting those days in July and August when it's in the mid-90s with, you know, dew points in the mid-70s. That's because that thing has migrated farther west, and it's basically sitting on top of us. That, if you think about like a sprocket on a bicycle and, you know, where the chain has to go around this thing, think about a hurricane getting caught in the gears of that, and it actually starts to steer it. So that's what has happened now, which is why the storm has started to take more of a northerly turn. It was moved to the northwest this morning, and it's now turning a little bit more to the north because it's just around that western or southwestern edge of that Bermuda High. And then it's this big trough that's coming through that's going to sweep it out to sea.
I'm sure there are many more questions to be asked about hurricanes and Hurricane Dorian specifically. Let's take one call or two before our first break, however. Number's 800-348-2551. We'll start it out with Julie in Saratoga Springs. Julie.
Hi.
Hi, Julie.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Okay, great. I was looking out my front window, open doors like to a porch on Saratoga Lake, and all of a sudden, you know, the front was coming through. My neighbor's canvas top to his boat lift ripped in half and was shredded off. The flagpole on their dock is now bent, and my next door neighbor after that lost very heavy pieces of his dock that were blown up and out of his dock. Was that a tornado?
I doubt it. I certainly didn't. I was kind of looking for rotation just for the heck of it. We actually, and the reason for that is I got a notification that there were some trees down on 144 River Road there.
Mm-hmm.
As you're heading down, say, toward Queemans, right around Wemple.
That happens earlier today. I'm not sure that was, it must have been weather related, but not specifically about a storm.
What I was looking for, because I was in Del Mar and I didn't really have that much wind, so I emailed, you know, the folks at the Weather Service. They're great there, and it's possible that something, a tree may have been hit by lightning. I haven't heard that as yet. Yeah. But anyway, the bottom line is I was looking to see on the velocity returns from the radar. There was no real rotation, so I don't think that was a tornado. I think, you know, sometimes you can get these little pockets of wind that'll come out, especially with this. It's not a real solid line of storms that was rolling through. So you just can get real localized straight line winds, and that's a distinct possibility, or perhaps even a little microburst, I suppose.
The difference between straight line winds and a microburst is?
Well, straight line winds blow across and a microburst blows down, basically. So
really?
you have a storm that is collapsing or on the back side of it, and you have, because cold air is denser than warm air, and the storm just can't hold it anymore, and it comes right down. And so there's all kinds of detection for that around airports, for example, because, you know, that's the kind of thing that could wreak havoc on air traffic too.
Well, be safe, Julie, and thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest. It's weather today on Vox Pop, and we will be right back. Music here for a weather show. Jason Goff is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you would like to ask meteorologist Jason Goff a question, a couple of emails came in here. This one is from Michael. Could Jason please discuss eye wall replacement? I'm glad you're not saying drywall, because that's a different show.
Yes.
Eye wall replacement. What are the forces that make it happen, and how does it occur? Also, hypothetically, if there are no steering systems affecting a hurricane, can it just stall in one spot indefinitely while gaining strength, assuming it is over warm ocean?
Yeah, the second question, the answer is absolutely, and we just saw that. I mean, it was over Grand Bahama Island, or just to the northeast of Grand Bahama Island, which is where Freeport is. That's the closest point to the U.S. In the Bahamian chain, and there was nothing to steer it like we were talking about before, so it just sat there and spun. Now, it did weaken slightly because it was over a little bit of land. That was the other deal with this storm, is that, you know, in order to get a hurricane, you need warm water down to a good depth, 100 feet or more, and there was an unusual deep pool of warm water, so this thing had unlimited fuel resources. As far as an eye wall replacement cycle, essentially what happens is the way that a hurricane begins is you get some storms, and then they'll start to spin around each other. They'll become a little bit more uniform, a little bit better organized. And then you roll your way up the chain from a depression to a storm to a hurricane. As a hurricane gets really strong, essentially in the eye, you have a lot of sinking air, which is why if you're in the eye, you see blue skies and everything is great.
Yeah.
It's around the outside where things. So that means that the hurricane is very healthy. It's continuing to spin. It's continuing to at least maintain its strength, as it's really is like an engine where it's bringing in heat. That's what continues to fuel the storm. So when an eye wall replacement cycle, what essentially happens is that flow in the center of the storm, that sinking air gets disrupted. So the eye can change its shape, and that will tend to weaken it a little bit as well. And again, you typically will see this only with really strong storms, although we didn't really see it a whole lot with this. We did a little bit. But typically, if you have, like, say, a Category 4 storm, you might see a couple of different eye wall replacement cycles that'll go on in the span of a day or two.
Mm-hmm.
And that will at least mitigate further strengthening. But as I said, this thing was very healthy, and certainly we have the evidence of that in all those hideous pictures coming out of the Bahamas.
You know, we see, and we get caught up in this a lot on the on the news and watching TV and everything else. It's quite a Category 5 now. Oh, it's a 4. Oh, it's only a 2 now. Explain to us why a Category 2 or even a Category 1 is a very, very bad thing.
It still is a bad thing. First of all, you're talking about one storm relative to the other. Now, there is a chart. I actually posted it on my site. There's a chart. So it's not what people say, well, what's the difference between a 75-mile-an-hour wind and a 90-mile-an-hour wind? It's only 15 miles an hour. So if you take that 15, like, well, shoot, we can get 15-mile-an-hour winds here all the time. It's not that big of a deal. But what you're talking about is not so much the wind, it's the force that the wind exerts on things, buildings and whatever else.
Right.
And that is exponential. So the higher the wind, you're not talking about just going up in a linear scale, you're going up on an exponential scale. So the difference between a Category 1 storm, 75 miles an hour, and the difference in terms of wind strength, and the difference between that storm at 185 miles an hour, the wind or the force that people will have to deal with is about 1,430 times stronger.
Wow.
So you're talking about, you know, 110 mile an hour difference, which is a whole new Category 2 storm, but you're talking about an exponential impact in terms of the amount of force, because you're talking about the square of the area. Not, it's not a linear thing.
Jason Goff is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551. If you have a weather question today, 800-348-2551. Before I get to the next email, you had mentioned a few moments ago, hurricanes really need warm water down to about 100 feet. Yet we've had many a hurricane over the centuries go all the way up north of Boston into Maine, where the water is very cold.
Yes.
So what happens there?
Well, they're weakening at that stage. A couple of different things. The storms will be weakening as they go, and that's what's going to happen with Dorian, too. The current forecast is, I didn't see the 2 o'clock update, obviously, it just came out, but as the storm continues to kind of rocket its way out, it's going to maintain that strength. It is going to lose that fuel of the warm water. Now, what can happen sometimes is that a storm can get energy from a different entity.
What is that entity?
So, like, for example, the so-called perfect storm in 1991,
right.
the Halloween storm, that was a hurricane, Grace, that became extra tropical. I'm not going to bore everybody with the differences with all this, but that means that the storm has not getting its strength strictly from tropical entities, that is the warm water and the light winds aloft and all that. It's getting a piece or a chunk of energy, if you will, from the upper levels of the atmosphere, which changes not so much the structure, but it just changes the overall, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a different type of storm. It
changes the character of the storm.
Yeah, the character, right. So for all intents and purposes, it's still a nasty storm. It's just classified differently. And Sandy is another example of that. And that was a lesson that the federal government learned, because the National Hurricane Center, once this thing made its way up north of about Cape Hatteras, it became an extratropical storm, which means that it was still very strong, but it was not getting its fuel, if you will, from the warm waters.
And how do they know that?
Well, you can just tell from the sea surface temperatures, the satellite view of the storm sometimes can even take on a little bit of a different appearance sometimes, but it's more of what else is going on aloft. So think about it on a more local level, right? We talk about thunderstorms here, for example. We can get storms very easily if the atmosphere is set up right. If we have a lot of sun to heat the ground,
yeah,
the warm air rises and so on, and then we're off to the races. Now, we can also get severe weather when it's an overcast day. So then people say, well, how does that happen? We don't have the sun to heat things up. Well, we have energy over our heads that is helping to strengthen that storm. So it could be an upper level low. That's ultimately what you want is you want air to rise so that it will cool and condense. And then that's what keeps that entity going. So that's sort of the same thing on a much bigger scale with a hurricane, is that you're not getting the strength and the source of the strength from warm water, but you're getting it from upper level energy and dynamics that way.
Dynamics being wind speed, or is this
it,
just
it can a, be it can be wind it can be wind speeds, it can be wind shear, which is something that we look at here.
That's a hurricane killer though, right?
It's a different type of a deal, because what you're talking about, wind shear, yes. If you don't want a hurricane to get going, then you want wind shear. That's a good thing. And that's why, incidentally, we had a quiet season up until about now, because there was a lot of wind shear in the Western Atlantic and over the Caribbean. But I'm talking about wind shear where you are using that as a way to get a lot of lift from the surface to continue to strengthen the storm so that it will continue to plug along. We look at wind shear here, and you call it like a highly sheared environment. And that's what forecasters and meteorologists are looking at around here if we're trying to assess the tornado threat for any given day. Because you have winds that are changing with height, they're changing direction with height, and that's what gets your spin going. So in essence, you think about it like a big vacuum cleaner over your head that's sucking up all of this air, and that's what's keeping the storm going. That's in essence where you will see that transition from tropical to extratropical as you make your way up into the cooler water. So it's still getting its strength, but it's just getting it from a different source.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Our guest today, meteorologist Jason Goff. The number is 800-348-2551. This email came in from Fran. And Fran says, I'm vacationing in northern New York, and we experienced a more than two-hour thunderstorm with intense rainfall early this morning. Are onshore storms increasing in intensity similar to what is happening with hurricanes?
No, I saw that this morning because I was up early doing my forecast, and it was up as you made your way up to the Tug Hill and then farther up toward Potsdam was getting drilled this morning with a lot of that. And that was a function, as I said, we didn't have any sunshine, obviously. It was 4:45 in the morning. So those were all the upper level dynamics. It was all of the things that we need aloft to continue to get storms going and to continue to keep them strengthened so that they can roll on through. Otherwise, if you didn't have that, then we would just all we would ever see would be just little pop-up thunderstorms like you get in Florida or someplace, because it's only derived from thermodynamics, heat, as opposed to dynamics, which is energy aloft.
I guess one part of Fran's email here I would ask you to comment on, and that was, are hurricanes increasing in intensity as a whole?
You know, it's hard to say, because we have, you know, you could make an argument either way. Certainly, you know, as global warming and climate change continues to come into the narrative on all of this, you know, in a lab or in theory, as we just talked about, the warmer the water is, the stronger a storm can be if everything else sets up just right. And that's where the questions can come in, because it's not just warm water that fuels these storms. Otherwise, we'd have them all the time throughout, you know, August into November.
Right.
But so, yeah, certainly, I mean, to have a storm like this that is, I mean, if you think about it, where the Bahamas are, I mean, talk about, you know, as a nation – having a target on you for hurricanes. I mean, you're sitting out basically in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and this is the strongest storm you've ever had. You know, it's hard to ignore, and, you know, certainly there are a lot of other signs pointing to that, you know, that climate change is leading to more storms. I mean, we had a stronger month of storms in August, a ton of them.
Tropical
usually,
storms or storms?
No, just storms
here.
For us. So it's I'm kind of getting off on a tangent here, but the jet stream remained more active. The Arctic is warmer, and that disrupts that jet stream, which, you know, in the past has stayed to our north, and it just kind of hangs out up there and slows down, and we have generally a quiet month of August as far as severe weather goes, but that didn't happen this year.
And it seems to be continuing into September. Jason Goff is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551 on Vox Pop, and let's go to Jeff in Cambridge. Jeff.
Hello. Hi, Jason. I really admire your work.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, you might have covered this already. I don't know. When you spoke about the different categories of hurricanes and how it's exponential in nature as far as the force exerted through different wind speeds, et cetera, does our category system take any account of the sheer size of the storm, like the area covered, the amount of overall moisture, et cetera?
No, that's a good question, but it doesn't. The category of a storm is only based on the wind speeds that are in it, either estimated by satellites or actually measured by the hurricane hunters as the storms get closer and the planes can reach them safely. So that's all it is. The size of a storm and the strength of the storm have absolutely nothing to do with each other. There are storms. There was a storm that came into South Texas in the mid-90s, an area that is long overdue for a hurricane. Brett that came in, I think it was 98. I'd have to check that. Anyway, this thing was tiny, compact, It was a Category 4 storm.
Right.
And it ended up making landfall in Kennedy County, which is kind of between Corpus Christi and the Mexican border, very sparsely populated area. Could not have worked out any better for those folks. But that was a tiny little storm. And at one point, Dorian was a pretty
strong storm, small area.
Yeah, but
I'm sorry to interrupt.
It's the strength of the storm that really counts, and then just hopefully you're not in the way of it. Dorian at one point was a very small storm, but it also grew in size. And then the wind fields, that is how far out the hurricane and tropical storm force winds extend from the center, those have grown. At one point, the hurricane force winds were only 15 miles out. Now they're at 45. Tropical storm force winds were like 50 miles out. Now they're 170. So it's the wind field and the size of the storm. And obviously, the bigger the storm, the more people it's going to affect.
Jeff, thank you for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. That sort of gets to what I was bringing up earlier about the Category 1, Category 2. I believe I saw a tweet from, I think it was the National Weather Service, that said, hey, this is downgraded. The winds are less now. But that's not the headline. The headline is, this is huge. It's going to drop a lot of water.
Yes.
And really, that's one of the huge dangers.
It's a huge danger, especially as you get farther north. I mean, we know that here in the Northeast. I mean, wind is always an issue with any tropical entity, but by far our biggest issue has been the rain. I mean, see Irene, Lee, you know, Sandy was a different story, but that had a lot more impacts on the coast. So what you're generally talking about is as these things continue to move up, the winds do come down, but still, I mean, you're talking about 110-mile-an-hour winds.
Right.
Right? So at any other time, you're like, wow, that's a really big deal. It doesn't do you any good to compare and say, well, it's not 185, it's only 110. It's still 110. The big story with this storm now, especially, is going to be Charleston. They're talking about, because of the orientation of the storm and the way that Charleston sits on the coastline, they're talking about the second highest storm surge ever to hit that city, behind only Hugo in 1989. So as far as those folks are concerned, they don't care about the winds. And in fact, the wind with this, because it's going to be paralleling the coast, and you know, it, as I said, the eyewall might make landfall into northern South Carolina or along the Outer Banks, somewhere in there perhaps. But the strongest winds in the storm are in the northeast quadrant, which is going to be offshore. So what folks are going to be a lot more concerned about, and what they are a lot more concerned about, especially in Charleston, is the storm surge. And they don't call it the low country for nothing. Yeah. There's just nowhere for that water to go but in. So that is going to be a big deal.
I saw emergency declarations already.
Oh, man, it's been, I mean, downtown Charleston has been boarded up for 2 days.
Yeah.
I saw a reporter down there on one of the networks, and she was there, and it looked like she was just in an abandoned neighborhood. She was right in the middle of downtown Charleston, which is a thriving, you know, big restaurant place and all that, and it's a ghost town.
It's probably a wise choice to get out of Dodge.
No doubt about it.
It's funny, this storm, the track, it seems like the edge is literally at the coast, and it's just taking the track up. Is that common to go all the way up the coast and never really go land?
It has really nothing to do with the coast. It's all about the steering currents that we talked about.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, it just so happens that it's almost a coincidence, if you want to think about it like that. And the only reason that it would make landfall is just because that land happens to jut out farther east into the Atlantic, you know, the Outer Banks, for example. So it's pretty wild. I mean, that storm could have just as easily been steered right into Florida at, you know, with 175-mile-an-hour winds. Folks in Florida got really lucky.
Jason Goff is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question about anything, you know, winter is coming. You may want to know about winter, snowfalls and whatnot. We'll talk about it coming up. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest. His website is jasonsweather.com, and I guess we have an update on that storm warning.
Yeah, there actually was the warning that we were talking about at the beginning of the show has been expanded a little bit farther to the east now. It's basically slicing through Rensselaer County now. Just cleared Wineskill, West Sand Lake. Post and Kill had it, and they have some more coming there. And then the northern part of that storm where I was talking about before around Greenwich and Cambridge is now heading into southern, basically the southern half of Bennington County from Arlington all the way down to Shaftesbury and, you know, in Bennington and over to Hoosick Falls. So heading up seven that way. This will do it. That line actually extends all the way down through the Catskills now, but it's weaker down that way. So this will be it.
For the rest of the day?
Yeah, for the rest of the day. So once, if you're getting clobbered now or you're about to be over into western New England or into the hills of Rensselaer and Columbia counties, once this stuff gets to your east, you'll be all done.
Brian Shields, who does the afternoon news here, will be very happy not to have to do storm warnings for the late afternoon.
Yeah, he's in the clear today.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Frank in Clifton Park. Frank.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I seem to recall that year that Hurricane Maria struck Puerto Rico in 2017, that there was another storm system that veered north and struck the Irish coast. Was that something unusual?
No, not at all. And in fact, you know, as Ray and I were talking about before, these storms can maintain their strength without the warm water because they have enough dynamics aloft to be able to sustain them. So a lot of times you will get storms, particularly this time of year and even into October and November, you know, which is why it's not a great idea to go fishing in the Grand Banks in October, you know,
right?
Because these storms can get whipping up. And so as this storm continues on, it's going to pass through the Canadian Maritimes or just south of them. I have a lot of family in Newfoundland, so
do
I always
really?
Keep a track. Yeah, that's where my family is from. So I always keep track of them there. And then the storm can continue. And the other thing, too, is that they really get hauling. It'll be accelerating where they might cross, you know, they may be going at 60, 70 miles an hour, the storms themselves.
How can that be?
Because they get caught up in these upper-level winds.
And they're pulled along by the upper-level winds?
They're just pushed along and just dragged along, whatever the case may be, whatever the setup is. And so, yeah, you can have a storm that was once a hurricane or a nor'easter as well, something like that that can make its way over to the British Isles, and it'll slam the west coast of there as well.
Fascinating. And this storm will be moving, theoretically, at 60 miles an hour along the ocean. How fast will the winds go? Do they have to go at 60, or can they go faster than that?
Well, no. That's the other piece too. Is that if a storm were to hit, in fact, I read an interesting book about the Long Island Express was a hurricane that hit in the late 30s.
Yes.
And it was just devastating, Providence, Rhode Island, and all the way up.
Mm-hmm.
And that storm, when it made landfall, was moving at 70 miles an hour, the storm itself. So not only did you have the winds within the storm, right? Think about the folks in the Bahamas with Dorian. The storm wasn't moving at all. If you had a storm that was, you know, let's say, I mean, that was a Category 3 storm, so let's say 120-mile-an-hour winds, you can't add them up linearly, so it's not like they had 190. It still is going to accentuate the wind issues that you have just because of the forward speed, dragging those winds along with it. It's just not a place to be.
And less time to make preparations, 70 miles per hour. All right, let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest. Ed and Ackard. Ed, you're on.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if the warm global warming, climate warming, what have you, warmer water in the Pacific and the destabilization of the polar jet stream is actually responsible for colder winters in the Northeast, that it kind of bulges up due to the warm water in the Pacific and bulges down in our area, Midwest and Northeast. And we've had some very, very cold winters lately.
Yes.
I'm wondering what your take on that whole situation.
Yes, sir. And you know, you're pretty much spot on. That can happen. You know, the best analogy that I've heard about the Arctic, and I heard this years ago, and I'm seeing it now more and more with a lot more articles coming out. More people are talking about climate change. We're finally getting rid of the knuckleheads that say it's a hoax. Thankfully, I mean, they're still out there, but you know, you also have people that say we never landed on the moon. So what are you going to do?
Did we land on the moon?
That's what I heard.
Okay.
So,
I don't think Trump really doesn't believe in global warming. I think he's just chosen to ignore it.
Yeah, I don't know what he believes in.
You don't want to get into that.
But yeah, no.
The other factor is all that water melting off of Greenland, and it seems like there's a chronically cold blob of water just south of Greenland, and how's that affecting?
Right, in which, you know, people need to think about the Earth as a giant system, which is what it is. There's a lot of interaction between the land, the air, and the water. So to your point before about the Pacific waters warming up, disrupting the jet stream. So the analogy that I was speaking of before is it's basically like leaving the freezer door open. Right. So that people can say, well, you know, because you've heard people that'll say it, whether they're joking or not, it's just a dumb thing to say. Well, you know, because it was 10 below at their house one morning in January, they say, well, what happened to global warming?
Right.
Well, the deal is that all that cold air is coming now for the north because somebody left the refrigerator door open and that jet stream is dipping down. And the fact that the jet stream was as active as it was in August is a potential telltale sign of that, because usually that's not the case. August, everything just tends to slow down. That was not the case
thank you, Ed, for the call. Then what can the unsettled weather of August tell you about what happens this winter?
Nothing.
Nothing.
No, I don't, you know, people, especially in this part of the country, and I always tell people this, and I see we have a call about the winter snow forecast.
All right, let's go to that call right now. Let's go to John and Canaan. John, you're on. I'm afraid Jason might disappoint you.
Well, that's just what I want to know. What kind of winter are we going to have, Jason? Is it going to have lots of snow, or is it going to be colder in Greenland? What kind of winter are we going to have?
All right, man.
Well, here's the thing, and I always tell people this. So there are outlooks that NOAA puts out. They put out, they look at a lot of different models, and they check all these things out, and they have outlooks, and they can be 3 to 7 days, 8 to 14 days. You can have a 30-day outlook, a 90-day outlook, and then they have seasonal outlooks
right.
that they put out. Now, this is not, you know, the folks that work at NOAA that come up with this stuff, they're a heck of a lot smarter than I am. But the difficulty with there are other parts of the country that are, I don't want to say easier, but just for our purposes, they're easier to forecast seasonally than our area, because with things like the polar vortex, right? That is very difficult to forecast even a couple of weeks out, let alone a couple of months. Same thing with snow. Most of our snow, as we all know, comes from nor'easters. And, you know, sometimes we don't know what those things are going to do 3-4 days out, sometimes even 24 hours out, depending on what the deal is. So to try to say, well, we're going to have a snowy winter, you know, and winters can start out with a bang and then end in a whimper, or the other way around. So what NOAA does, and this just cracks me up every time I see it, what they do is the way that they issue these forecasts is that they give probabilities as to whether an area is going to be wetter or drier than normal, colder or warmer than normal, and they'll assign a percentage to that. If you look at the winter in the Northeast, it always says EC, equal chances.
Right.
Which means it might be colder than normal, it might be warmer than normal.
Flip a coin.
Right. So we just kind of have to wait and see. And, you know, and scientifically, that's really all you can do, because you don't have any data to steer you otherwise. And science wins out.
Hey, you know, you've been liberated since you had to do all these long-term things on TV. You don't care anymore. You won't do it.
No. It's great.
God bless you. All right. Back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Dave in Stillwater. Dave.
Yes. Good afternoon, gentlemen. On my way home, I just tuned in. I find the conversation fascinating. Thank you.
You're tuning to the right station?
obviously.
Okay.
If this question's already been addressed, please ignore it. I'll find it out from someone else. References with storm surge. Can you define what a storm surge is in a hurricane and what causes it?
Yes. No, it's a great question that has not been asked. And that is a huge issue with storms, because more people die in hurricanes from drowning than they do anything else. And a storm surge is a big part of that, or can be a big part of that, that and heavy rains that, you know, swell up rivers and things. So basically a storm surge is, you want to think about a hurricane as a bulldozer. as this thing is pushing. It does bulge the water up a little bit. Some people think that, well, it's because of the low pressure and it draws the water up. That's not really the case. It's more like, think about it more like a bulldozer. When you have a hurricane that's coming along, it is such a massive, massive entity. And it's going to push that water closer to the coast as it approaches the coast.
Yeah.
That's just the mechanical piece of it. The practical piece and what the Hurricane Center does in terms of forecasting this and the hydro, all the hydro folks, and what they do is that they look at the seafloor and then they look at the coastline. So the way that Dorian is setting up, we talked about Charleston earlier, the orientation of Dorian to Charleston, where it is low, that water is going to get pushed up there. Now, in theory, I mean, that's why they build seawalls, right? Because the storm surge can go, but a lot of seawalls are only up to, like in Corpus Christi, there it's up to 15 feet. Mm-hmm. Well, if you have a 20-foot storm surge, guess what? Yeah. That doesn't barely even slows it down.
Right.
So that water is going to make its way inland as the storm. So it's not quite like a tsunami, but think about it along those terms, and that water is going to spread its way inland. And if there's really nowhere for this to go, that is if you have a gentle grade of, say, the seafloor to the beach up to the land where there are houses, that water is just going to keep on coming. Mm. There's nothing for it to really absorb. You know, if you think about it, again, in theory, if you were to be able to construct a gigantic ditch, then all that water could go in the ditch and you'd be okay.
Right.
Right, which is obviously engineering is not possible for that, but that's kind of the way that it goes. So the way that all of this water is going to get pushed on to the low country of South Carolina, that water is just going to keep on trucking, and there's lots of it.
How accurate can these storm surge predictions be?
They give ranges. So I've seen, you know, from around Charleston, 5 to 7 feet. And then as you go a little farther north, it might be 4 to 6. The National Hurricane Center website, which is nhc.noaa.gov, they have a really cool, and it's only been a couple of years now that they've done this, they have a really cool map that you can check out, and it gives you a lot of neat different views of the topography of the land, the topography of the seafloor, and it'll give you what they call an inundation model. How far inland is that water going to go? And it's especially notable in places like eastern North Carolina, where you have a lot of rivers and you have a lot of bays. For the water to go. And you have all these barrier islands. If you look at a map in North Carolina, it's a kind of a maze of different things. And that water gets pushed up. It happened last year, or was it 2 years ago, where you had places in eastern North Carolina, places like Greenville, where that water got pushed all the way up the river and just flooded the town.
Mm.
That happened with Floyd in 99. East Carolina University had to shut down for the entire semester because it was underwater. So that's what happens is if there's nowhere for that water to go, if it's real flat, it's just going to keep on coming in.
The topography of the ocean floor and the coast being one thing, it's also dependent on the wind speeds and the size of the storm?
Yes. Yeah, because if you have a weaker storm, a storm that doesn't have as much wind with it, it's not going to have that ability to drive that water farther inland. You'll still get coastal flooding, but it won't be as widespread, it won't be as deep, and it won't be as far inland.
All right, let's jump back on the phones. 800-348-2551. David in Williamstown. David, you're on.
Hey there, Ray. Love your work, by the way.
Thank you.
And you too, Jason.
Thank you.
My question is, I listen all the time for the lengthening and shortening of the day by 2 minutes, 3 minutes, once in a while, 4 minutes. From 1 year to the next, how does that vary per calendar day? Because it seems like you can't count on losing, say, 3 minutes on September the 4th every year.
It you know, this is something that I'm not well versed in.
Well, let me just stop you. Tomorrow is the astronomy show with Bob Berman. And I think Bob is all over this. You can go ahead, Jason.
I'm sure he is. Yeah,
if you can go ahead.
Yeah, when you see like we lose 2 minutes a day or whatever, that's rounded, and then it also has to do with latitude and sun angle, and so you're going to be able to see those differences. They're more stark as you approach the solstices as opposed to the equinoxes. And it's really fascinating stuff, but it's more of an astronomy thing than a meteorology thing. So I don't want to continue on. I'll tell you what, David, I do have some resources at home because I have been reading up on this, especially in the summer solstice, and I found it fascinating. So if you want to email me, jason@jasonsweather.com, I can give you a little better write-up and also send you some resources so that you can check it out.
And you know what? Copy Vox Pop at WAMC.org, and I'll read it first when Bob is here tomorrow.
Awesome. All right. Thank you very much, fellas.
All right, you're
thanks
welcome.
For the call. Over to Hillary in Sheffield. Hillary.
Hi. Thanks very much for the show. I really like it.
Thank you.
The question is average. For instance, if you say today's temperature is so many degrees above or below average, I always think, well, the average has got to be going up. And is that a problem? I mean, for instance, what if you were to compare to the average of 1970?
Yes.
Would that be telling? Is it not worth mentioning? Or
it certainly is, because you know people hear the global temperature is going to rise 2 degrees Celsius within but before the end of the century, and people go, well, 2 degrees, what the heck difference does that make? You know, you think about what's the difference between 64 and 66. That's not the case. So you're looking at the overall temperatures. The National Weather Service, first of all, the Weather Service folks in Albany, their website is fantastic. They're a great bunch of people over there anyway, too, but they have some really good resources on there. So what they do is every 30 years, or I should, let me back up. The climatological averages are based on 30 years of temperatures. Every 10 years, they update it. So right now, we are in the climatological average that we use was calculated from 1980 to 2010.
All right.
And then it'll be gone from there. So, and they'll actually, and on their site, they have the 10-year average difference between those two. So you can check that out. But yes, they are going up.
All right, Hillary, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Joan in Schenectady. Joan.
Hello there, gentlemen. How are you today?
Fine, good. Thank you.
Good, good. First, before I get to my question, I can almost see you wincing at the math that we're doing today, but carry on, carry on. I have a question, since we shouldn't look at the winter forecast, but I want to do some backcountry camping in September, having missed my usual August window. Can you give me a hint?
All right. You know what, Joan? I'm glad that you're putting him on the spot here.
Oh, I can deal with that.
All right.
No, it's
all
good.
Right.
What it has been happening over the last couple of weeks is that we warm up for a couple of days and then we get cool. When we're on the backside of this trough and this front that's coming through as we speak, that's going to lead us into a real fall-like weekend for sure. Our temperatures are going to be a good, like, getting back to Hillary's point, a little bit below average as we roll on into the weekend. So going from here, if the pattern stays as it is, it's going to be a cooler than average September. But it looks like we've got a lot of dry weather coming at least through the next week and a half. Joan, I want you to do this, though. Email me, jason@jasonsweather.com. Let me know like a week or so out. And let me know where you're going, and I will get you a specific forecast.
Okay, I have to let you know, I'm techno-Luddite. I don't use email.
God bless you, Joan. You're one of my favorite people now. Good for you.
Even though you don't really comfortable with the math, and I can tell just from your voice. But anyway, thank you. Actually, that dry and cool I can handle. So, and good. My window is the next two window weeks out. So thank you.
All right.
Alrighty, you're welcome.
I don't know why you think that I'm uncomfortable with the math. Just because I'm in radio doesn't automatically make me adult. I mean, I am one, but math is fine. All right, Jason Goff. Tell us about the website and where to go one more time.
So just head to jasonsweather.com. I have as many specific forecasts as I can think of, but it's an interactive site in that all you have to do is email me if you need a specific forecast. Email me, tell me what you want, and I'll get it to you. And hopefully you'll have everything you need all in one spot.
Eventually, there will be too many people doing this, and Jason Goff will be up 23 hours a day. And then what happens?
I'll worry about that when the time comes.
All right, man. Well, thank you for being here. You put a lot of things into perspective for us. Support comes from Landis Arboretum. Aspirants presenting Fall Plant Book at Bake Benefit this Saturday and Sunday. Full Moon Concert Series September 13th, made possible with grant funds from Montgomery County, LandisArboretum.org. Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. iMediaConsult.com and Agricultural Stewardship Association presenting Landscapes for Land's Sake. Art exhibit October 12th through 14th in Washington County. Opening reception October 12th, noon to 5 p.m. to benefit farmland protection, agstewardship.org. Once again, thanks to Jason Goff for being here today. Thank you for listening. Really astute calls. We love them. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Kayleen White. Our producer, the affable Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the show, yeah, it's astronomy, all right. Bob Berman and Valerie Rapson will join us to answer your questions. Stay tuned now for 51%.